This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, March 10th, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. The foundations of many parts of economics can be found in Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, but it would be a mistake to call Adam Smith a radical. Russ Roberts, economics professor at George Mason University and advisor to the Cato Institute Center for Trade Policy Studies, discusses The Wealth of Nations on this, the 235th anniversary of the book's publication. Adam Smith, I think, is both characterized incorrectly by people who are, for lack of better terms, on the left and the right. That is, I think a lot of people on the left have tried to reclaim Smith in a lot of ways, and perhaps appropriately so, given his views toward business.
And also his views on public policy generally. He's not an anarchist. He's not an anarcho-capitalist. He correctly understood, as I think all good free market economists should understand, that you shouldn't be pro-business, you should be pro-market. Having businesses fail is extremely important. Keeping an eye on businesses' relentless desire to use the political process to keep out competitors is a really good idea. And I think Smith understood that as, you know, it's still relevant today, his insights into the natural impulses of people in business to keep out competitors and to be able to charge high prices. So I think the left claims him for that. And they also like to point out that he was not an anarchist. He was in favor of some social policies that we would call so-called progressive policies. Nothing wrong with – Smith has many great insights, and some of them are true even for the left, and they're not all true. He's a human being.
What insights does Adam Smith have to offer in this burgeoning field of behavioral economics?
Well, you could argue that Smith was really the first behavioral economist. The behavioralists are a bit of a backlash against the hardcore Chicago ideas of people are rational and take count of all information, markets are efficient. Smith certainly, as many economists understand, that doesn't hold at all times, at all moments. It can be a very useful way of thinking. But what Smith was, I think, deeply attuned to was our flaws as human beings, our ability to self-deceive, our ability to make incorrect decisions based on ego, based on pride. And in that sense, he is a forerunner of the behavioral economists and behavioral finance people who talk about people's inability to correctly perceive themselves and others. What I find fascinating about Smith is that Smith was equally interested, as his later namesake Vernon Smith is also interested, in how markets and natural forces, which would be a better word than markets even, inherent forces in behavior work to offset some of those forms of self-deception. So he didn't he was not naive about human beings. He certainly didn't see them as rational modern rational utility maximizers, but he did see them as people who make decisions and who are as best they can and who are, of course, flawed. But at the same time, he was interested in how those flaws could get corrected by outside influences. There's some amazing passages in The Theory of Moral Sentiments where he talks about how if we saw ourselves as others see us, we couldn't bear it for a minute. It would be unbelievably painful. It would force us to change our behavior. And yet, of course, if we saw ourselves as others see us, we'd have trouble going forward. Much of what allows us to go through life is a little bit of self-deception, but not too much.
So we're all like the jerk in some sense. That is too stupid to know that what we're doing is unlikely or difficult.
We're a little bit blind. I think there's another great line there, something about no surgeon operates on himself without his hand trembling. You know, our willingness to – it's a paraphrase, but our willingness to self-correct is difficult. It's a challenge for the human beings, but we do it from time to time, and he was aware of that.
Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations set the stage for a whole lot of areas of economics, especially examining data. And could you talk about that a little bit?
Smith, he didn't do a lot of econometrics. There wasn't much to aren't that many good statistical packages available for his iPad of the day. None. But what another thing that did make him distinctive was his willingness to get his hands dirty. And he obviously had immense breadth of interest and knowledge. And he was an empiricist. He was interested in how the world worked. He brought in all kinds of data from all kinds of sources and all kinds of areas of economics. And in that sense, he was, in many ways, you could argue the first social scientist, not so much the first economist. He would not have seen him. He did not see himself as an economist. He saw himself as a moral philosopher. He was interested in human behavior, what was virtuous about it, what was not. In many ways, he was a psychologist. He was very interested in what makes us tick. He was a sociologist. He was interested in how that ticking takes place in social contexts. That runs all through the theory of moral sentiments. And of course, he was an economist in that he was very interested in the traditional areas of economic behavior, trade policy, wages, prices, et cetera. So he used data to make his claims. He was a marketer too, because he wanted you to agree with him. And I think he felt that as a moral philosopher, evidence was a useful way to enhance his claims. And I think that was true then. It's still true today. We're very often persuaded or at least influenced by what we think of as facts. They may not always be facts, but factual evidence is very important, and it runs all through The Wealth of Nations.
P.J. O'Rourke wrote a book about The Wealth of Nations, sort of encapsulating some of the insights in the book, because he found the task of going through the book itself to be difficult. What do you think about the quality of the writing by contemporary standards, and whether or not it offers particular insights that people might gloss over?
Well, The Wealth of Nations is, it's available in many editions. It's available online at the Library of Economics and Liberty at EconLib, econlib.org, in its entirety. So it's easy to get access to Smith. Reading it's a little bit harder. I think the key to reading Smith is to skip some sections, which are not relevant for the modern reader or are difficult for us because we don't understand the context that Smith was writing about. Much of the beginning of The Wealth of Nations is totally readable and fascinating. The sections on trade policy are totally readable and fascinating and full of insights into what we would call today political economy, or even what we might call public choice, how the intersection between politics and economics and what motivates politicians. I find The Theory of Moral Sentiments even more readable than The Wealth of Nations. It starts slow. If you get past the first part, it's full of insights into behavior and advice that's still relevant today. And I can't emphasize it enough. On The Theory of Moral Sentiments, Smith talks about the foolhardiness of trying to accumulate wealth in the pursuit of happiness. He was not a materialist at all. Again, I think people have this weird idea that The Wealth of Nations is Ayn Rand of a few hundred years ago. It's not. He's a different type of thinker and writer. And The Theory of Moral Sentiments is timeless. Much of The Wealth of Nations is timeless too. You just have to pick and choose. So I recommend that people delve into it and look into it, and you find lots of passages that are still informative and quite entertaining.
Russ Roberts is an economics professor at George Mason University and an advisor to the Cato Institute's Center for Trade Policy Studies. You can read more on the work of Adam Smith at our website, cato.org.